We'll be live. Hey, folks. We are live. Thanks for tuning into the BAM podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, for a very special episode of Owen Explains It All. And that handcrafted artisanal musical intro lets you know this is a quality podcast coming to your ear holes, starring Mr. Owen K.C. Stevens. How you doing, Owen?
Hi, folks. I'm doing good.
All right. And subject for today, oh, wait, lest I be amiss, our co-host is Mr. Jacob Blackman. How you doing, Jacob?
I am well today. Thank you.
All right. And the subject today is the finale, the Book of Boba Fett, and how you can bring some of that fun to your various RPGs, including Starfinder.
Yeah, and I believe our last show was also on Boba Fett, so we're being a bit Boba Fett heavy, which I think is not a shock given my history.
Well, it is the science fiction flavor of the moment.
At Rocky Road, Boba Fett, and Mandalorian Crunch, I suppose. And so, spoilers, if you have not watched the finale, even if you watched everything up to the finale, we're going to be discussing stuff that happens in the finale of season one of the Book of Boba Fett. And I was a little cheeky in that I suggested to Mike that we subtitle this one, What Was All the Fan Rancor About Anyway? And if that doesn't make you groan, then go back and watch the finale again. So, the big payoff, which, you know, was not a shock for people that were paying attention, was that Chekhov's Rancor, the giant monster that had been introduced by Machete earlier in the season, shows up and does a fair amount of droid stomping and wall smashing before going somewhat renegade and doing maybe not as much damage to the town as the giant robots that it was there to stop, but certainly a lot, and then finally getting put to sleep after doing its King Kong impression. Now, I personally have been treating this entire season as a trade paperback tie-in to the Mandalorian comic, right? It is clearly not only the same universe, but intricately linked to the same story. It's not designed to stand alone. The expectation is that you'll watch The Mandalorian two seasons, and then you'll watch this, and then you'll watch the next season of The Mandalorian. So I think a lot of the objections that people had to it were based on not really getting that this was a sub-chapter of The Mandalorian. And they just they had some characters, some background characters that they wanted to do more with, and they wanted to pass time between Mandalorian seasons without nothing happening but two episodes, because basically two episodes of this were two episodes of The Mandalorian. Most people I know have decided that the payoff was worth it, even if they weren't a fan up till now. I personally enjoyed the whole show, but I don't insist that Star Wars necessarily make a whole lot of sense. Way back in the original movie, right? You've got a weapon that you're told can blow up planets, and then it can't fire on the enemy because there's a planet in the way. And that's the only reason the Rebels stopped the Death Star, right? So if you go back to that, well, why don't they just, then you end up with, well, why don't they just blow up the planet in the way and then blow up the Rebel base, or let the raining chunks of debris from the planet destroy it? So basically, Star Wars is a fantasy series that works on the rule of cool and has starships and blasters. And seen from that light, I very much enjoyed the Book of Boba Fett. What I found fascinating about the end, which when we did the last Boba Fett thing, I had not intended to do another Owen Explains It All on Boba Fett. But there is something about the last episode that directly speaks to a great way to handle something that has been added to Starfinder recently. And that, weirdly, is mecha. In Tech Revolution, there are rules for mecha, actual full mobile tanks with arms and legs, mecha. And the way the game handles those is to say, hey, look, if your characters are in mecha, they're going to be able to handle encounters that are 2, 3, 4 CRs higher than their level. That's what they're there for. So I know a lot of people have said, well, why would I have an encounter that the players sort of see coming that is going to be CR 2, 3, 4 higher than their normal level? And that is basically what the entire last episode of the Book of Boba Fett is. It's an encounter that is higher CR than the heroes, the characters, main characters can handle. And they're doing fine for quite a while, and then two giant Scorponok droids show up, which are basically clearly tanks, very advanced tanks for that matter, and they are tearing the heck out of the city. There they are, and Boba Fett ends up having to go get his Rancor, which was gifted to him earlier in the city, and ride it in to smash up the tanks. Well, if you treat those Scorponoks as robotically driven mecha, and treat Boba Fett's Rancor using the mecha rules, here's a thing that you're not going to carry around all the time, but you can pull out when the situation calls for it, the narrative flow will be very similar to it was in this episode. And if I was the GM and I was looking at this, it'd very much be, well, there are also other built-in reasons why I might well give this option to player characters, and they would have a reason not to pull it out every time they're in over their head. First of all, the Rancor obviously lives at Boba Fett's palace, i.e. the old Jabba palace, where they've got a complex for it. So that thing's not going to fit on a fire spray, and most commercial freighters aren't going to let you bring a Rancor along. You obviously can ship them because the twins, the cousins to Jabba, brought one along, but it was asleep at the time and slept for quite a while afterwards. So you can also say, look, the only safe way to transport these is if they're asleep. So if you know there's a problem and you want to ship your Rancor to it, it will sleep through most of the problem unless it happens to be right at your home base. So it would be quite easy to do something like war beasts that use the mecha rules, but rather than being mechanical, are biological. And my tie-in blog, which I will be putting up on my website Wednesday rather than tomorrow, because I've looked at my schedule and I'm going to have to finish writing it, we'll be looking at how to have a war beast template that you can slap on mecha so that you can have mythosaurs and rancors and whatever the name of the thing is that Boba Fett was writing in the animated short that introduced him way back in the Star Wars animated special, which for people that missed the throwback, when he's introduced the Rancor, he says, "I've ridden bigger beasts before." He's talking about that thing that was not canon until part of it is now.
Yeah, they keep trying to make the holiday special canon.
Well, so, I mean, that animated segment was the best part of the holiday special, and did not have a lot of the silliness that the rest of the holiday special did. Mm-hmm. And it's very much in keeping with the animated style of, say, Droids that came along later. Mm-hmm. I think it's great to have the sort of partial tie-in that says, okay, it is now canon that Boba Fett rode a big beast. That does not mean that it was this beast in that animated special. Yeah. Like the Mandalorian's disruptor rifle, right? That originates in that animated series, but they have not established that that was all canon. They're just taking the parts of what they like and bolting it in. Yeah, there it is. I don't know what that thing's called. And I there was a time in which I did, like when I was writing the Alien Archive for the Star Wars role-playing game. But, you know, he's ridden one of those. So... Yeah, actually, that animation is really a lot like Droids.
It's more than likely the same group.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, I've never looked into that, and I've never watched them back to back. So, I think this episode, you know, up till now, I've been seeing the story of Boba Fett as very much about what's it like to need a tribe. How can you introduce rules that allow you to have followers? Which was my previous blog. A quick and simple set of rules for, hey, you are a guy in charge of something now. You've got some people hanging out helping you. How can we do that in Starfinder without anyone having to run, you know, 3, 4, 5 NPCs all the time? But the Rancor is clearly something different. The Rancor is something that you pull out when you're in over your head, when the situation is ratcheted up to a certain point. And narratively, it's kind of brilliant. We know the Rancor is there. It's Chekhov's Rancor. It was introduced earlier. We know it cannot easily be or quickly be transported. And even though it's strong and blaster resistant, if it dies, it's gone. You can't just have it repaired. And if you bring the thing into a fight and you get knocked off it, there's a decent chance that we'll go around smashing up the place. And since you can only really use it in your home territory, even if you gave it to player characters, I think we would be reticent to pull it out as a solution for everything. It's a nice step between I've got some guys and I have a starship, because we've seen what happens if you get to take a starship and use it against people on the ground. Now, one could make the case that that would not have worked against the Scorponox, because they apparently had the most advanced mobile shields that we have ever seen on a ground-based unit. And I don't have a problem with that, right? We had no reason to believe that Jedi were telekinetic until Empire, and then it just came out of nowhere. So it's a galaxy-wide technology. I presume they're extremely expensive. I presume that the syndicate running them actually doesn't keep them on Tatooine, right? They were bringing in more troops and bringing in... So I'm guessing if they are a government-sized, militarized crime syndicate, that's the homemade tanks that you'll find in some Mexican syndicates, right? That these are the things that we only pull out when we really, really need to. We ship them to where there's a problem, we blow the problem away, and then we pack them up and put them in the next place because we can't afford to have two of these everywhere. But frequently, money is one of the things that being a evil crime syndicate will give you. So having things that are too expensive for the military to be able to afford them. Actually, Jacob just today had released his Steel Dragon product for M&M, which has a Steel Dragon robot, which is amongst the most advanced robots, security bots, war bots in that world setting, in his Superpowered Legend setting, but is so expensive that a standard military can't afford it. But again, if you are, you know, a kingpin type and you've got a ton of money, but you can't literally support a full military, you don't have any place to put one. And you have to deal with a superhero. Having a super expensive robot that you have just for special cases makes sense.
I was really happy with the use of the Rancor to defeat the Scorponok droids. I mean, obviously you see it coming. Didn't necessarily see the Scorponok droids coming, but you knew that the Rancor was going to be used for something.
Yeah.
And this was a great use of that in that it was a threat that only the Rancor could handle. It wasn't just Boba Fett coming in, riding the Rancor, threatening all the little Pike soldiers, saying "Go away." It was something they needed this for, and that was a great story element.
Yeah, I mean, it was clearly set up narratively, which is the same thing you can do for a game, that their standard choices won't work. Right, they discover that the shields are too effective against energy weapons, and that all their kinetic weapons move too quickly to get through it. Which leads to the running joke that I saw the next day that, you know, it's the slow Rancor that penetrates the shield, yeah, borrowing from Dunes. It is the slow blade that penetrates the shield. But it's the sort of thing that works really well in a role-playing game, especially if you set things up so that people have some opportunities. You can have a fight and say, okay, here's this thing on this fight. If you all get you and all your people off the map, this fight is over. And your characters are now running through the city. Maybe we'll use the chase rules, and you've got a chance to do something else. So that your victory conditions in that first Scorponok fight is not defend the Scorponok. It is get the heck out of there and survive. And then you say, okay, make some skill checks. You've learned that they are basically immune to energy weapons. Perhaps their EAC is too high. And certainly their KAC is way too, just energy armor class and kinetic armor class for people that don't have Starfinder burned permanently on the brain. Is too high for anything except special weapons. And you could do something like, hey, it has to be a melee attack. You could do something like, say, it is specifically designed for unwieldy weapons, for example. One of the fascinating things about having the whole episode of The Mandalorian where he gives up his Beskar spear and has it made into, amongst other things, chainmail for Grogu, is that otherwise his Beskar spear could have solved this problem.
Yes.
Right? This scene requires you to know, why does the Mandalorian not have the spear? And at the time he gives up the spear, to not be thinking, oh, they're getting rid of that because they're going to do something with it. It wasn't like the Rancor, right? We didn't immediately think, oh, there's going to be a ratio-shielded creature and he's going to wish he had that back.
Did you guys wonder if the armorer had to get rid of that because she knew that Vizsla is going to challenge them to a duel?
Well, so she said, for example, that the existence of a Beskar weapon put all Mandalorians at risk because it was a weapon that can easily penetrate their armor. And we have already seen that it could be taken from whoever originally had it, because it was gifted to him. And even if she knew that he was going to be challenged, which I think, you know, I suspected it based on the names. I have to suspect people in character did. Even if she thought that the Mandalorian would fight with the Darksaber rather than with the spear, if he's killed, the spear then ends up in another Mandalorian's hands, and that's someone who's potentially looking to go take over Mandalore, which might have Mandalorian resistance, and if he has the Darksaber and a spear that will actually penetrate Beskar armor, he's set up to be a tyrant. So, given that they're sort of, this is the way extremists, I suspect that the first level is that part of their sect order is we do not use this material for weapon. Or at least we don't use this material for repeatable melee weapons. I sort of thought that his little bird missiles were in fact made of or tipped with Beskar, and they're not weapons. But it might be that those are allowed because they're one shots, which means you will not constantly be using them to break through armor. Or maybe I misunderstood. I have not gone back and looked. You know, it's like the jump pack clearly doesn't require Beskar to make, so it could be another Mandalorian technology that he just happened to get at the same time that he got the rest of his armor. I haven't carefully looked at that question. But I do think it's a great example of using a narrative device to explain why something is rare but not impossible, right? If you wanted in a Starfinder game to say, hey, there's a fair amount of adamantine armor out there that gives DR, there are rules for it in the book. There are no adamantine weapons to speak of. They're extremely rare. And people ask, well, why the heck is that? You can say, well, the only groups, or groups plural, that are adept at forging adamantine, which is obviously resistant to normal methods, have as a sect a rule that they do not use it as weapons. That doesn't mean it never happens, and you can have something like a spear or a sword or a slingshot, whatever you want, show up and be an exception to the rule. But then if your player characters are friends with this group and they want the stuff to get forged and other useful things, that group can say, well, we're happy to do that, but first you're going to have to turn that over. It's a lot like using relic rules. There are relics in Starfinder. Not a lot of them, because they tend to be, you know, item level 20 style items. But there are things that are specifically not easily recreated just by having the necessary ranks in a craft skill, unlike almost everything else in Starfinder. And like the Rancor and Mecha, you can look at that spear and look at those Starfinder rules and say, okay, this is a great example of there's a villain with this important dangerous thing. You defeat the villain and you get the important dangerous thing. Then how do we get the important dangerous thing out of the campaign without the players feeling like they're not being rewarded, right? Again, narratively, the Mandalorian has it turned into armor. Part of that armor he gives to Grogu, who's left him. Grogu then comes back. So he gets to have a permanent sidekick, and that sidekick has better protection, and he now has a quest to redeem himself for having ever removed his helmet in the presence of others, all connected to finding that Mandalorian covert and having the spear converted. So I think there's a lot of really good narrative tools you can look at this series for to figure out how do we do various storytelling mechanisms using the tools that Starfinder gives us that don't necessarily intuitively come with the rules for how they work.
All right, cool, cool. So
you got a solid 8 minutes off that question, Mike.
I did.
I note that, for example, the Mandalorian is constantly going in the back to take early in the series, and then he's finally told, your healing process is finished, and right after that is when he goes back to pretty much kicking the ass of the vast majority of people he's dealt with, which means there is a reasonable argument to be made that he couldn't do stuff great before because he was injured. He could have been suffering permanent setbacks, which if you wanted to in Starfinder, right, you could say, hey, you've got old injuries. You have zero resolve, so you can't heal your stamina points between fights.
Ouch.
You can't use special abilities until you're fully healed. You're running around, you're doing stuff, but all the resolve-powered things you would normally have aren't an option. Mm-hmm. And you may well be constantly fighting defensively because you don't want to suck down damage.
Now thinking about that mechanic, that sucks.
Yeah,
I could easily see that as a way to limit players with lingering injuries. That is a great idea.
And it's different mechanically than just giving them a -2 to everything, right? If you're sickened or off target or flat footed, you have these flat penalties. But the math in Starfinder is pretty tight. So if you tell someone you are sickened all the time, and they are still taking potential penalties from other things, they can very quickly get out of their depth dealing with typical encounters. If you tell them that because you tire easily, you can't heal quickly, you still ache like from surgery, your character does not have any resolve. You don't have that reserve of depths you pull up so that you can shrug off the stamina that you've taken, so that you can activate the feats and special abilities you have. Mm-hmm. It does not prevent them from doing their day-to-day stuff. Their armor class is the same, their damage is the same, their attack rolls and skill checks are the same. It is just the things that require you, and first of all, you can't recover stamina during the day, and that's huge, right? Your envoy will be the only way you're getting stamina back at that point. So you're trying to avoid fights as much as possible and avoid taking damage in fights. You might be a good deal less flamboyant. But also, if you have powers that say, you know, you can use this once a day, and then you can reuse it after you have, I call it recuperate, but spend a resolve to regain your stamina points. Those all become just once-a-day abilities. You can't reuse them. And the abilities that require you to burn a resolve to activate at all are just gone. So it'll affect some builds more than others, obviously. But I do think, especially from my point of view, when you're looking at the Mandalorian and Boba Fett, you're looking at mid to upper tier characters, right? These are not third, fourth level characters. These are people that have had an opportunity to pick up some special abilities that are resolve driven. And that is, I think, a good way to represent those lingering aches and ailments that the Bilbo Baggins, I feel like butter scraped over too much bread. So now I'm suggesting that you make Bilbo Fett. Who has a jump pack and a Mandalorian helmet and invisibility.
Well, I know there's an Amazon show coming up.
There is an Amazon show coming up, and
I'm sure we'll be talking about that eventually.
Yeah, there should be enough magic in the Rings of Power, not the least of which may well be the Rings of Power, that we could have a conversation about them. Although, just sitting here, one of the things that I always found interesting was that the Ring of Power, the One Ring, It makes you invisible. That's great. That's potent. But that doesn't seem like the sort of thing that entire empires topple on. But if, for example, making your Ring of Power, they say that he put part of his essence into it. If half your resolve points go into the Ring of Power, and whoever has it, whether they're wearing it or not, can burn those resolve before their own, that becomes a huge, kind of hard to see, not obvious power source that matters to people. Yeah. So just off the top of my head, I could easily see saying, hey, Rings of Power have resolve points in them, and the guy that made one has his resolve points locked into it, and he doesn't want anyone else using those resolve points. Again, it's an opportunity.
Oh, yeah, there's a great mechanic there, because, you know, he gave multiple rings to the multiple different races. So what if among those particular species rings, you can draw on the resolve of the other ring bearers?
Have we gotten off subject? Should this be a separate show?
So, I mean, I've talked about the Rancor. We've got a few minutes left, and Jacob's got a neat idea for a mechanic. I'm happy to be a little flexible on what we're discussing.
We'll allow it. Please go ahead, sir.
But to bring it back a bit to Boba Fett, the same thing could be used for the Darksaber, right? Mm,
yeah.
Using the Darksaber clearly is more than a proficiency issue. First of all, when we see the Mandalorian use the Darksaber, he clearly rolls a 1 and damages himself. Mm. Now, in most games I run, I don't like a mechanic where it is normal that rolling a one means a critical fumble. But I am good for using it in specific circumstances. And I personally think saying, yes, you have a lightsaber. You're not proficient with it. You can use it. But with a lightsaber, rolling a one means you hurt yourself if you're not proficient. I'm okay with that. That makes sense. They're dangerous things to wield. And you can do that with any weird, odd technology you want to, the variable fumble option. But you can also make it something that requires, for example, it gets heavier and heavier because if you're not proficient with it, it requires resolve to use each round. And if you don't use the resolve, its penalty increases each round. So I can whip it out in a fight. In the first round of the fight, I'm at -1. Second round, -2. Third round, -3. Okay, I'm going to burn a resolve to reset it. Now I'm back to only -1. And that lets you create a potentially extremely powerful relic, which I think it will qualify as, because it's more than a regular lightsaber. I'm not sure if we've seen it do anything a regular lightsaber can't. But it clearly, I mean, it's the only black-bladed saber we're aware of. The fate of an entire people are built into it. It's the only Mandalorian-built lightsaber. It would not shock me if the handle of the Darksaber was made of or included Beskar so that the handle was lightsaber-resistant, which, as Darth Maul can tell you, can be important and relevant. And I think anytime you've got something that seems a little weird going on and you want to adapt that to Starfinder, looking at resolve points is a great place to do it. Because they're a universal mechanic. Every character has resolve points. Everyone uses it for at least something, which is recovering stamina points between fights. Some people use it for a lot of stuff. We specifically tried to set things up that before fifth level, characters should not end up with abilities that spend resolve unless it is defensive or healing, because we wanted people to have those resolve points to be available to recover damage in between fights and to stabilize and get back into the fight if you need to, if you're knocked out. But around 6th, 7th, 8th level, you start to have enough resolve points that you can spend them on other things. And if a character doesn't have enough resolve points abilities and they are feeling left out when, you know, envoys are using them for skill checks and spellcasters are using them to create additional effects for spells, and vanguards are expending resolve points to get additional entropy points, one of the things you can do is to introduce a mechanic or an item or a device to the game that say, hey, this thing, you could make it as simple as you are not proficient with this weapon until you've got exotic weapon proficiency. But if you spend a resolve, you will then be proficient for 1 minute because you have bonded with this semi-psychic plasma sword, whatever we're going to say, other than trademarked lightsaber.
Psionic Spirit Blade.
What?
Psionic Spirit Blade.
Yeah, Psionic Spirit Blade. Absolutely. Beam Saber, right? Whatever you want. Just.
I call them Star. I call them Star Sabers in my game.
And, you know, the prequels specifically went with laser sword, but I still don't think that they've got laser sword trademarked over there at Lucasfilm, unlike lightsaber. So while we did get a little bit off, we brought it back to the Book of Boba Fett, that there is yet, in addition to the mecha slash war beast things you only bring out for special occasions mechanic, yo, dog, I heard you like exotic weapon proficiency, so I let you give your pet badger, which you use an exotic weapon, the ability to use exotic weapons so you can have exotic weapons on your exotic weapon.
For that, go ahead. Finish. You were saying something.
that immediately brought me to Gopher Chucks from Kung Pao Enter the Fist. All right, you go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, the meme brought to mind a GIF I once saw of someone who said, so, your animal companion now qualifies for a feat. What feat did you give them? Exotic weapon proficiency. Why? And then it goes to a GIF of a dog who has bitten down on the end of a balloon, and the balloon he's flipping around on his head is swinging around rapidly. It looks like a morning star.
Yep.
So it's like,
I've seen that. In fact, So those are the those. I think there's some great narrative stuff to take away from the Book of Boba Fett. I think there are some cool hints on how you can use mecha and similar drop-in for special encounters options, and how you can tie resolve points into both drawbacks and benefits for your campaign. All of which I will talk at least some in my blog on Wednesday.
All right, sounds good. We will have those links in our show notes when they show up. So. Owen, always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, sir.
Jacob, always a pleasure. We've got just 30 seconds left, so I will indulge us all with our great musical intro. 1 second. And with that, we will catch you next time on Owen Explains It All, hopefully in 2 weeks. So take care, everybody.
Bye, folks.
Have a good one.